Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Dave Vellante. Welcome to the Wikibon Peer Insight. Today is January 12th, 2010, our first Peer Insight of the year. And the Peer Insight, as many of you know, is where peers discuss challenging problems in the data center. And as I said, this is Dave Vellante. I'll be your host and moderator. And the topic for today is opening Pandora's box of SAN management. How to manage storage in an increasingly virtualized world. And we're very happy today to have Ryan Perskowski on, who is an experienced practitioner and SAN manager from Barclaycard US. Welcome, Ryan. Please say hello to the Wikibon community.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'm also here with John MacArthur, who's at our offices in Wikibon in Marlborough. Good day, John.
Good day.
So just to get the housekeeping out of the way, if you're not speaking on the call, please mute your line. And if your phone doesn't have a mute button, you can hit star 6. That's star 6 to mute and star 6 to unmute if you want to participate. We really encourage everybody to participate, and you'll have an opportunity to do so. This call is being recorded. It's going to last 1 hour. If you're on Twitter and you want to tweet this call, please use the pound Wikibon hash so that it will feed into our social media outlets. So Barclaycard US is part of the Barclays Group with a headquarters in the UK and is one of the largest financial institutions which provides credit cards for consumers and corporate clients as well as retailers, enabling them to make card payments. So Ryan, thanks for joining us today. You've been in the storage business for nearly a decade, I believe. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, as you alluded, I've been doing this for about 10 years. I have stayed primarily in the financial industry. Prior to my stint here at Barclaycard, I've worked for a little bank called MBNA. If you guys ever had co-branded credit cards in your wallets, NFL, MLB, I don't know, LL Bean, that was MBNA doing all that co-branding back in the early 2000s. After that, I worked for Bank of America, so I was their lead switch architect and lead switch administrator on the SAN team. So I've been, I don't know, exposed to this stuff and then flopping through management software for the last 10 years and been trying to get a handle on how to best do my job and obviously make myself look good to my managers and to my the Exco members.
So you're well-versed in the dark art of SAN, is that right?
I'm well-versed in the headaches of the dark art of SAN management, yes. It is, I don't want to try to paint a picture of like all SAN management software is horrible. It's not. You know, it's the only way we can do our jobs. But there seems to be, over the last 10 years, room for a lot of improvement. And when you first start out and you're only using one product, you never had your eyes open to the possibilities out there. So I guess that's kind of why I'm here today, is to say that there are other things out there and allude you to how they help you.
So can you tell us a little bit about what's going on in your shop, what systems are installed, and what applications you're running?
Sure. For my little bit of housekeeping, I speak for Ryan Perkowski. I am not representing Barclays or Barclaycard in any sense. I'm speaking solely from my experiences and doing this for the last 10 years. The people behind me told me I have to say that. So my environment is about 450 terabytes. I am mostly an AIX shop. I do have Solaris running throughout my environment. Now, bear in mind, everything that I'm saying, I am very SAN-centric in my technology, so there are probably loads of other servers out there, but since I am merely the SAN guy, I don't know about them because they're not attached to me. The things that are attached, I would go so far as to say it's 75% AIX, a small smattering of Solaris boxes, probably 10 to 15% Windows, and a couple VM hosts here and there. The AIX stuff, primarily we're running... I forget the version of AIX off the top of my head, but we're running VIOs and LPARs on top of them. So it's AIX's virtualized environment where we can create guest OSs running on VIO servers.
Okay, so it's really the AIX piece that we're going to focus on today, I presume. So not a big VMware shop, is that right?
That's correct. It's just been my experience that most of the stuff that runs on SAN is usually business critical stuff, and most of the business critical stuff is not, at least in the shops that I've been through, they don't consider VM ready for the tier one type application.
Okay, so you said you were at 450 terabytes, and you grew really fast. As I recall, you started out quite small. Can you talk a little bit about the starting point and how you grew and what was driving that growth?
Sure. Well, the company as a whole has probably been around for, been on the scene, I will say, and I put a little asterisk next to it. We've been on the scene for probably about 3 or 4 years. We've been around for 8 or 9 years, but we really started, hitting a business growth 3 or 4 years ago when Barclays came in, swooped us up, and started backing us. 2007, and I'm actually scrambling to find the chart real quick. 2007, we were 30 terabytes, to put it in perspective. We've grown exponentially as far as our consumption rate, and it's mainly been driven by the number of customers, number of accounts we're tracking, and the capabilities that we're offering to our lines of business as far as, crunching the data that we collect. So given that extraordinary growth, the other thing to note is we grew up in a consolidated environment. Only being on the scene and having that growth spurt 3 or 4 years ago means we're not scrambling to consolidate, 100 servers onto consolidated platforms. We invested in consolidated platforms early on, and our environment was virtualized early on. So one of my main struggles is understanding, and it goes across all my lines of technology here, understanding when that VIO cluster, when there's an LPAR that gets too big for its britches, and we need to split it out and dedicate more resources to it. So it's an interesting paradigm where I'm not worried about putting a bunch of, independent operating systems on the same physicals. I'm worried about a bunch of independent operating systems being split off from virtualized environments. So I'm constantly looking for, does this VIO cluster have enough bandwidth from the HPA perspective? Is it doing too many IOPS at one point? And we constantly have to keep an eye on when things grow in that sense.
So normally what clients do in that situation is they over-design the SAN. Is that in your experience?
Well, of course, but you understand when you're 30 terabytes big, no matter how much you over-design, by the time you hit 400 terabytes, hopefully you're not 10x over-designed. You see where I'm going with that? So it came down to, I'm sorry?
You might be 10x out of a job.
Yes, exactly. I can be a little bit over, and there's a little fudge area that I can have, but not that much. So yes, the SAN was over. You can say it's overbuilt, but when it comes down to bandwidth, most SANs come in two flavors these days, 2 or 4 gig. And if you're only pumping enough to cover 1 gig, you could argue, hey, you're over-designed, but it probably costs more to go find a slower switch somewhere and slower HPAs. So as far as bandwidth concerns, yeah, we're over-designed to a point. I'll give you an example, and I'm going to keep harping on this one example throughout this discussion because it is my biggest customer, and I say that with a wink. It's my biggest pain in the butt is what it comes down to. I have a data warehouse that's about 20 terabytes in size. It's sitting across 6 VIOs. There's 3 LPARs that make up this data warehouse, and it's an Oracle data warehouse. On an average day, average moment when I'm looking at it, it's probably moving about 800 megabytes per second in and out of my storage frame, and that's bytes with a big B. It'll peak anywhere up to 1600 to, and I've seen it go all the way up to 1800 megabytes per second, and it'll stay like that for an hour or so. So the amount of IOPS and the amount of throughput that this monster generates, you have to constantly keep on the watch to make sure that, in the SAN world, everyone's pulling from the same resource pool. You want to make sure that everyone's getting their fair shake, but you got to watch out for those whales that are in your environment every once in a while. So it's most of my monitoring emphasis is on this giant guy, and watching to make sure he's playing nice with everybody else in the swimming pool.
Okay, so that big whale was at the epicenter of your growth, is that right?
He is one of three databases that have become the epicenter, so to speak. One of them is a SAS instance. I've actually dedicated an entire DMX4 to that SAS instance. For the first time, we went from having, single or multiple storage frames, storage tiers, I should say, to literally dedicating storage frames to applications. When I was at Bank of America, that was actually a normal way of doing business, was dedicating resources to applications. Here, we're more of a you know, a shared mentality toward our storage growth. But since I've dedicated that BMX4, he's sort of off of my Epicenter radar. Even though he is a whale, he's got plenty of resources, and you could argue that I've over-designed him, but I kind of wanted to get him off my plate. So, yeah, the data warehouse and the data warehouses, I'll call them the ugly cousin of the data warehouse, are my two main focuses. But currently they sit on ENC storage. It's on a BMX3. I realize it's outdated, 2 gig technology, but it's that's the hand we've been dealt.
Right, and I mean, not to harp on the over-design piece. I mean, it's really that's a pretty simple choice, I guess. You either over-design or you go out of business, right, or don't manage growth.
Yeah. So, a lot of, and it's not just true of where I'm at now. A lot of the processing that happens, there's dollar values associated with these things. If we don't finish a report in time and get it off to one of our customers or to one of our vendors, we pay penalties. So, timely processing of these things is, it's not just a nice to have, it's a absolute business requirement.
So other than the fact that you maybe provision more resources than optimal, what other problems did this growth cause?
Well, as you can imagine, and I'll just harp on the bandwidth for a second, if you only need 80 megabytes a second and you're given a 2 or 4 gig link, you're probably not going to run into bandwidth constraints. But as you grow, and it doesn't happen overnight, it'll slowly creep up and slowly approach, where you're going to start running into slowdowns on your network. The key for me was getting those phone calls from the database guys saying, we have a slowdown, or more than likely, we had a slowdown, and it's usually, 2 days ago we had a slowdown, and we think it's your problem, and you need to tell us that it wasn't. My major issues were I never had enough ammo or enough information to definitively say one way or the other whether it was me or not. Given OEM tools, especially at the switch level, most of the time I could tell them what the throughput was, but I couldn't tell them what the actual user experience was, and that's my disconnect. Telling somebody that, they said, hey, it took me an hour to commute to work. And I said, well, you've got a 4-lane highway. I don't know why it took you an hour to commute to work. That doesn't tell you what the traffic conditions were at all. So it's, I found those OEM tools lacking in that sense.
And when you talk about OEM tools, you mean the ones that were supplied with the arrays, or what are you talking about?
Both storage arrays and the switches themselves. So to get specific, we grew up a Cisco shop in the switch environment. Cisco's have at least the blades that I put into my, or that were put into the, my nice little rock and roll there, that were put into the Cisco blades, they're oversubscribed right out of the box. So when you hit a certain bandwidth for a certain, grouping of ports, you reach a ceiling, you reach a limit. The idea with the oversubscription, it works great for a lot of, a lot of smaller companies or mid-sized companies where you might have one port peak up and then die down and another port peak up and die down. My problem was I had these whales in my environment that they would peak and stay peaked. And so in an oversubscribed switching world, they're taking all the shared resources and nobody else could really get a fair shake at the network. So when I talk about bandwidth utilization, it's not necessarily somebody hits a ceiling. It's a group of ports hit their ASIC ceiling, so to speak. So, it's the OEM tools that I'm talking about were the Fabric Manager that comes with Cisco. Ironically, it's also called Fabric Manager now in the Brocade world, or I think they call it DCFM now. Those types of things.
Okay, and so what'd you do? Did you just bring in tool du jour?
What did I do indeed? Well, for the first 5 years of my career, suffered with it. I didn't know anything else was out there, to be honest. The slowness issues or the gray issues that SAN managers sometimes get called on, there's in the storage frame realm, you are given tools, and I'm just going to harp on EMC because I'm an EMC shop. You are given things like WLA or Performance Manager, or I forget what the new, they just rebranded it and it's got a new acronym, but it's all basically the same thing. You're looking at the storage frame and you're getting metrics right from the storage frame. The problem with that and the problem that I see it doesn't speak to the user experience. It'll tell you what the cache hit ratio is, or it'll tell you what the response time of the spindles are, but it's missing the bigger picture there. The only analogy I can give to you is if you go to a Ford dealership or the service account or the service manager there and say, I need you to check my car out and see if there's anything wrong with it, he'll usually look at it and say, are you under warranty? Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. But I all but guarantee as soon as your warranty runs out, there's something wrong with it. You'll have to pay $600 to get it fixed. By going to the storage frame and asking it if it has a problem, more than likely it's going to tell you no. It's, you know, it'll show you the things that it's really good at doing, but I have little confidence that it's going to show me the problem areas that I really need to get a hold of. So asking me what I did and how I fixed it, again, first 5 years I suffered through it. Beyond that, I started getting wind of other ways of doing it, other ways of, I mean, even the OEM tools as an example. I don't want to prattle on about this. It'll give you megabytes per second, and to this day, I can't figure out how to get the Cisco Fabric Manager to trend that information over time. When I was at Bank of America, there was a series of Perl scripts to find that information out and to help me plot that information down and basically database that information out for me. Now, I'm not a programmer by trade. I mean, it was very rough and ugly, but it worked for me. And that type of, you know, asking the switch information, getting answers, tucking those answers away somewhere, asking the switch the same set of questions and comparing the results, that's really what actually led me to the virtual instruments product of NetWisdom. It does the same thing, but they actually have, you know, paid programmers that developed it, and it works fantastic. I would say that virtual instruments product was the first thing that opened my eyes to these other types of monitoring programs out there. I mean, I've always had companies approach me and tell me, hey, you know, we've got a monitoring product that can help you out, and it's better than the OEMs. And I always had an air of caution with it because I figured these are companies that, you know, you would assume, as an example, that EMC would be able to monitor EMC stuff the best. What I've found, though, is that might be true, but they spend more of their time developing the product and developing the management software, not the monitoring software. So it's always seemed that the OEM tools have been an afterthought, and I've found these new tools to be, you know, the third-party tools. These are companies that make their bread and butter being good at monitoring. So if they're not good at doing that, then they're not going to sell a product. So looking at I'm just going to harp on NetWisdom, and I also use the NetApp SandScreen to do some of my monitoring too. The amount of information that these two guys have gleaned and the way they put the information together for me, they've solved that huge hole of anytime I have a gray area, anytime the database guy tells me I have a problem or had a problem, I've got database information at my fingertips to show me what the actual user experience was, not just what the cache hit ratio was. I mean, I can tell a database guy, hey, you're hitting 50% of your reads coming right out of cache. It doesn't really translate to them. But if I tell them, here's what your response time according to my network was, you know, that really rings true for them.
Okay, so you say virtual instruments, NetWisdom, NetApp SandScreen. So how did you deploy these things? Did you have to go to tool school to learn how to use them?
Well, I POC'd them. First and foremost, as I hope any good shop does, it's, and I'll be honest, the first time that we took a, you know, the small step off the ledge here and went to a third party for monitoring, it was to solve a very specific problem. That data warehouse that I was mentioning was getting horrible response times, although I had nothing to prove that. I was showing the response times at the spindle level to be very good. I was showing their cache hit ratios to be consistent throughout the day at about 40 to 50%. All the normal tools that would, you know, that I would use or that I had at my disposal at the time weren't really showing me what the issue was. We POC'd NetWisdom as an example because I knew it was a dedicated monitoring tool. And specifically, they have basically are watered-down fiber channel analyzers that you can stick in line and watch the actual traffic coming out of there. To make a long story really, really short, and by long, I mean about a 2 to 3 month engagement here, it turns out that the database was actually requesting 1 meg block sizes. So every time they need any little bit of information, By the time that filtered down through the LPAR and coming out the end of the VIO, it was asking me for 1 meg reads. Now, the storage frame was very happy to respond to 1 meg reads, and the metric that the storage frame was telling me was, hey, every time you ask me a question, I'm responding to it, you know, within 6 milliseconds. What it wasn't showing me was that you're asking me a meg worth of questions, and it's taking me a whole 50 milliseconds to get the whole answer out. So to the database guy, he was saying, no, your response times are 50 to 60 milliseconds. And I'm looking at it thinking, I'm showing 6. NetWisdom came in, and within, God, I'd say within 2 or 3 hours, we saw immediately the block size, which is one of the metrics that I can capture for you. And I was like, well, duh, you're asking me a meg's worth of questions. It's going to take me a couple, you know, milliseconds to get the full meg across the network. And it turns out they didn't even need the full meg. The way that they had chopped up the database was they could actually get away with 256K blocks. So they chopped the read size down. The number of read requests coming into my storage frame did not increase, and their response time, you know, was cut down into the teens. So it was really kind of testing the water, sticking a toe out. I had an actual reason to go for it, and I had a pain point that it solved immediately. And once we saw the benefit of that, I mean, I had project managers here at the bank asking me, well, what about this database? You know, can you tell what's going on with this guy? And I would tell them point blank, I don't have NetWisdom wrapped around it. I can't tell you. Today, the project managers, if they spawn up a new database, they already ask me, you know, by name for the product. They say, you know, what is the budget? What do we need to get NetWisdom wrapped around this database? So it's, over the last year and a half, it's evolved from a, you know, dip your toe in the water to now it's called for by name.
And so can you take us through again what you need to do to capture those metrics? Is it weeks,
sure,
or months of running probes? Is it?
Well, to understand how it actually does its business, and again, we're speaking of just one of the products now, it has a two-pronged approach of how it gathers metrics. One is very simply it asks your switches in your environment. It pulls them using SNMP every whatever interval you send. I have it set to every minute, I think. So it's asking every port in my fabrics basic questions. What's your megabyte per second? How many CRC errors have you seen? How many logins have you seen, logouts? You know, silly things like that. And I'll be honest, when we were POCing it, I didn't really see the value of that other than watching for errors. Remind me to circle back on that because I've found huge benefits from just those simple metrics. But the other way that NetWisdom gathers information, you literally split your fiber cables in front of your storage frame. And I know it sounds daunting, but they provide a fiber channel splitter for you, basically. Very simple procedure. If you can plug a cable into the back of an HVA, you can use a splitter. It splits off a small amount of light from the actual transmission going between the switch and the storage frame, and you let that small amount of light go into one of their probes, which is that watered-down fiber channel analyzer. Actually setting up the fiber channel splitter, you do have to take a storage link down for however long it takes you to unplug and plug in a cable. So you know, obviously you're not fiber channel quick, but it is an outage for that link. Once you get the splitter in place, though, the splitter's non-powered. I never have to touch it again. And since we've implemented that going forward, all my storage ports are split. If we add more storage ports, I buy a fiber channel splitter for it, and it's part of our standard operating procedure now to pre-split these things off. So once you overcome that little hurdle, it's as simple as plugging these things into a probe, aiming the probe at your NetWisdom portal itself, and it starts collecting metrics out the wazoo. You drink from a fire hose when you first see this. And the reason it took me 2 or 3 hours to find that block issue, I don't want to say overwhelmed by the amount of information that you get out of this thing, but it's as if you showed a caveman a telephone. You showed a caveman a telephone, and he's like, there's so many things you can do with this. Where do I start?
You're in metrics Disneyland.
You are. My jaw was open, and I'm staring at all the sites, and I'm, taking pictures. But eventually you start to see that, look, it might grab 80 metrics per conversation, but you don't need all 80 metrics to solve every problem. You start to realize, all right, well, let me start hitting at the normal things. But like, what is the response time per exchange? And I could verify instantly that the database guys saw 60 millisecond response times. and I saw 60 millisecond response times. And it was them also verified that the command to first data, that first bit of data that comes firing out of the storage frame, the storage frame was true. It really was getting response times in 6 milliseconds. So I validated both, you know, the end user who was telling me something and the storage frame. But furthermore, it started, you know, as you scroll across and you start looking at all the other metrics, you're like, hey, look at that. There's 800 read requests per second. And when I saw the block size, I was blown away by that. Like, holy cow, that's pretty big block size for what they're asking. But it didn't take long for it to catch on. Now, I've been doing this for, you know, 5 or 6 years by the time we implemented this. Actually, what would it have been, 7 years, I guess, now? My guys, the people on my team, hadn't. So the real rubber meets the road was how my guys actually took to the tool. They all kind of stood there with that same jaw open. I didn't know this was possible look in their eye. And one of my guys summed it up best by saying, the network guys, the IP guys, have had these types of tools for years. And when they troubleshoot things, they have these types of things at their fingertips. You know, they have the snorts and the traces and things like that at their fingertips. Us SAN guys never had that power. Now that we do, with a product like this, it becomes easier and easier to troubleshoot these types of problems. So the rollout for me was, you know, buy the software, get the switch information, I think I bought a single probe and wrapped it around that data warehouse, all of its storage ports. Once we literally solved that problem, I started rolling it out to more and more of my applications.
Okay, good. So I want to come back to some of the things that we talked about there, but let me open it up now to some of the other folks that have heard some Star 6s. Any questions that you all have for Ryan or comments that you want to make?
Hi, this is David Flyer. I'd like to ask you just on the cost justification angle of this.
Mm-hmm.
What are the costs for putting this in? Both you know the software costs and the hardware costs and your people costs to put it in.
Sure.
Or I don't know what's the best metric for measuring that from.
Well, so we'll talk about the justification in a second. I'll talk about how expensive it was it to me. I'm obviously not the sales guy. I don't work for them. They can get you a quote on how much it costs. As far as there is a software piece, it's licensed per port. There is a hardware piece, which is the probe itself. And to put it in scale, I'd say that was, and this was 2 years ago, I think the software piece I probably sunk in, I don't know, $50K for the number of ports I had and somewhere around $100K for the probe itself. It costs a server, obviously, to run this stuff. The other interesting thing is you can't use SanDisk on the server because if the SAN goes down, your monitoring software goes down, which is kind of pointless. So it was unique to my Windows guys that I actually had to buy, you know, a RAID of hard drives. It took my guys probably, I don't know, I'd say about 20 hours to install it and get it up and running, 20 man hours. And that was mainly in getting the software installed and getting the probe tapped out. By tap, I mean split. Once it was up and running, the benefits were instant and immediate. I alluded to earlier that if I miss some of my deadlines, it costs money to the bank. While we weren't actually missing any of the deadlines, we were getting scary close to missing some of my SLAs. So when we looked at the amount of money that we would lose if we missed one of these deadlines versus the amount that we paid for this, it was a pretty no-brainer decision to put this kind of insurance around your application performance. Since then, this tool has blown me away with the amount of uses. And maybe it's just I'll pat myself on the back and say I'm pretty imaginative on how I use these metrics, but it's paid for itself several times over. As a quick aside, and I mentioned those megabytes per second that you can get from the switch, any OEM tool will get you megabytes per second. And according to at least Cisco, they can trend it over time. I never knew how powerful that was until my backup guy came to me, and I'll give you a quick 2-minute story here. The backup guy came to me and said, hey, that new application that we just rolled out on a new server, I am unable to complete level 0 backups on a Sunday. So I'm sorry, it wasn't on a Sunday. He was told that his level zero backups, the quietest day of the week for him should have been a Thursday, and I forget exactly why. It's very specific to the application. So this is a home-built application grown, you know, in the company here. We talked to the application developer, and he gave us a window of when that backup should actually be happening. We took his advice, set up a backup window. He told us somewhere between, I think he said like midnight and 4 a.m. are the best times to actually run these things. No, I stand corrected. It was between 6 p.m. and midnight. He said that users are using it between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m., and starting at midnight, there's batch processing that happens in the middle of the night. So, you know, it made sense to us. We set up a backup window, and the backup guy came to me and said, look, I can't complete it in time. Your SAN sucks, literally, because we have a little running rival between us. But I took a look at just the megabytes per second utilization. I asked him to not run a backup for one night, and it turns out that the hours between 6 p.m. and midnight were actually the busiest for this server. We went back to the application developer and said, well, this is exactly the opposite of what you told us. He was completely confused, too. We go to the actual user community, and the manager of the user said, well, oh, yeah, at the end of the night, we all queue up 6 or 7 queries, hit enter, lock our workstations, and go home. And we were all blown away by this. So it turns out, you know, that instead of doing one query at a time, at night they queue up 6 or 7 of them, hit enter, and it just pounds away at the HBAs in my storage until they all finish. Long story short, we changed the backup window. We moved it during batch processing, which is actually lighter than we anticipated. He's able to do these backups perfectly. That saves us from buying extra HBAs, from putting extra storage port resources to this server, from doing all sorts of things that I would have done in the past had I not had this type of information at my fingertips.
So that's very interesting. So if you were looking at this as a sort of overhead on your storage, and the reduction in your costs for your storage, can you give some sort of percentage that it would be as an overhead, and what you think you might have got from it?
Well, let me make sure I understand. When you say overhead, do you mean does it impact what's right?
No. I didn't mean overhead in the sense of impact. I mean the cost overhead per terabyte or whatever it is. You know,
how, oh, I see.
How much extra does it cost you? and how much? And presumably from this, one of the major benefits is that you don't have to invest in you've got business benefits. You're not going to pay fines on it, but presumably also you have a reduction in the amount that you buy which an over provisioning of some sort.
That's correct.
To make sure you don't have those risks.
Correct. So it's tough to say what the overhead would be because a lot of the benefits are cost avoidance based.
Right. Yeah. No, so, I understand. So you're guessing at what that is.
Yeah. It's. I'm trying to. I've never actually looked at it on a per terabyte basis of how much overhead it would have been.
You're pretty experienced with this stuff. Do you have a guess that you could?
On the cost side, you said 20. You said 50K. You know, what proportion of your total installation would that cover? I mean, how much of your installation is covered in I don't know, arrays or terabytes, whatever is easy?
So, and again, there's two pieces to the software. The 50K piece just covers this. I'm pulling the switches. 100% of my switches are covered by that.
Okay.
And versus how much did my total switch cost run me?
So all of your network is covered. That was the first point. Yeah.
Yes. Now and to be clear, that is only the switch metrics. That's just the megabytes per second, the CRC errors, the logins, the logouts. There's like 8 or 9 metrics that it gathers. The more detailed information, the response time, the block size, the user experience, that comes from the probes.
Right.
And I've got probably, let's say about 50% of my environment covered, not including DR.
Right.
Okay.
And that's covered in the 100K for the probes.
My initial deployment was 100K for the probes.
And that's grown overall now to
probably 3x that. I think I have 3 or 4 probes running now.
It's around half a million. Would that be a reasonable
for my size environment? I mean, we're We're just throwing numbers at a wall and seeing what sticks now, because I think that would be reasonable.
Right. No, and then, so that's for, and how many terabytes do you say? I've forgotten.
Well, 450.
450.
You can take that number and divide it by half, though, because half of it's
bigger. Exactly. About half of that.
Yeah.
And so you, from that that 225 terabytes, so if you were just crude about it, you know, how many extra terabytes would you have had to have bought or extra cost or whatever
that,
it is?
That's a better question. Yeah, that's probably that's in the millions, because I would have I'm still running on the DMX3 today because we fixed that. They were ready to throw a full DMX4 at that, which I got quoted out at $4.5 million. So that $150K that I put into the tool initially saved me $4.5 million right on the front door.
So it's a very significant portion of that you could tamp down the demand for.
Yes. Yes, it's helping me glean more from the existing stuff I have, which translates directly into cost avoidance. It's not so much of storage utilization in the sense that it's not reducing the number of terabytes I'm buying.
It's reducing the ports and the bandwidth and
all the other widgets that make up the SAN. Yes, it's optimizing how I'm using the terabytes that I have today. And it's not just the SAN. Some people consider the backup environment part of the SAN. We're two separate departments here. It's helping him as well. So he's you know, better understanding how to get the most performance out of even his equipment. Quick aside, he finds out that, you know, one of his virtual tape libraries, his ingest port, isn't running optimally, and he was looking around trying to find out, you know, I can get more backups, more streams going at one time, just by using the information that this software can provide. So he's also avoiding costs as well.
So John MacArthur has a question.
Yeah, I'm listening to sort of the price point here, and obviously you're a big gun. You're if I'm a mid-sized shop, what's the approach there? What are the tools available for me that are a little more?
Yeah, I would agree that I'm mid to large, but I'll get to that in a second. I'd almost argue, though, because I've worked at the Bank of America size, where, you know, this where I'm at today feels like a small shop. So for the smaller guys out there, the amount of information you get just from the software alone would be enormous. And the other nice thing about the product is, from the probe perspective, it's based on the number of storage ports you have. The smaller you are, the smaller number of storage ports you have.
Can you just tease that out for us a little bit? If I go software only, what's...
Sure, in fact, I've got both softwares, both pieces running right now. Hang on a second. Let's see. So, again, it's asking the switches. One important thing to note is it only knows what the switch knows. And that came up, in fact, last week to me, where my backup guy has a report that it generates every night. So when he comes in the morning, he's got a PDF sitting in his inbox that shows him last night's tape activity as far as throughput levels, slowdowns, errors, things of that nature. He's very reliant on that automated resource, because when backups fail, he sometimes doesn't know that, somebody else in the bank rebooted the server in the middle of the backup. You know, and he'll spend hours trying to research that, or he can look at the report and say, oh, I got a log in and a log out on that port. I know what happened. So the number of metrics that this thing gathers, let's see, I'm getting megs per second, the link rate, loss of sync, loss of signal, link resets, link failures, CRCs. It's about 8 metrics. And I also, again, I point out, it's only what the switch knows. I upgraded my firmware on that one of those Cisco switches, and apparently that reset the counters on all my ports. So the interval immediately following my upgrade, NetWisdom asked the switch, hey, how many CRC errors do you have right now? And it said 0. Well, the interval just prior to that, it had, you know, 28. So in my graph here, I show negative 28 CRC errors that happened at that moment. And you get all kinds of, you know, if the switch tells it something kludgy, it'll record something kludgy. But obviously, I can discard that one interval. I mean, I knew what was going on then. So for the small guys, you get those megabytes per second. And the other thing to notice, it's data-based. It's stored and kept for you pick how long you want to keep it, which is, to me, I'm not a database guy. I don't know how to maintain a database. I've never tried to, you know, purge old data. It's completely automated from that perspective, so it's pretty idiot-proof, as seen by me using it.
So anybody else out there have any experience with this type of stuff or have any questions for Ryan?
I have a question. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, could you just
Hi, Ryan.
Could you please just give us either your first name or your first name and last name, whatever you
Hi, yes, my first name is Johnny. Hi, I just want to speak quickly because I'm getting kicked out every 15 minutes. So, yeah, this has been tough. I redialed in 3 times. Ryan, you were talking about you had Cisco switches in your environment.
Mm-hmm.
I would believe they're the MDS class.
Yep.
At the time when you didn't have you know, tools such as NetWisdom, did you use the Fabric Manager server?
Yes, we did.
Which is like kind of collects like you know, performance trending, historical analysis deal.
I could get real-time information out of it. In fact, I've opened cases and had my local account rep here trying to explain to me how to get trended information. I couldn't get it to show me that trended information, to be honest. And it might completely be an education issue on my part. But it definitely wasn't intuitive. And I had at least one of my guys assigned to figure it out. And between the two of us, we couldn't figure it out.
Okay, so that one, when you installed when you're using Fabric Manager, you didn't happen to install it like on a centralized server, did you?
Yes, it is. It's installed on a.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, it's installed on a Windows box that sits back in my data center.
Okay, so you're able to get real time, but you didn't get like the capture of past performance, like the month, the activity past month, past year, or anything like that.
Correct.
Okay. So basically, like when you get the information in real time on the Cisco switches, mm-hmm. that basically the information that NetWisdom gives you is exactly what
it's exactly the same.
Okay.
Exactly the same. The difference is how it's presented, and for me, and I can only speak to myself, it was the intuitiveness of how do I get the information back out of the tool. As I said with the Cisco thing, I couldn't figure it out bluntly.
Okay.
With the NetWisdom thing, it was instantly in front of me and easy to use. I could tell it, go back 5 minutes, go back a day, go back 5 weeks, or I could give it specific time intervals and say, I want to know between Monday at noon and Tuesday at noon, show me everything you know.
Another question I want to ask is, I just want to understand more of this, the SC splitter thing, how it connects to the probe. I'm kind of not catching all that. How does it actually work? So I just want to know, okay, I'm back.
You're still with us, Johnny.
I'm back. I thought we lost you again. Oh my gosh, our phone system is just we've been having a lot of problems with that phone system here. So
I just want to understand. So it is. Think of it as a cable splitter. I mean, it's non-powered. There's no power that goes to this device. It is a. It comes in one U. You get to split out 16 ports in one U. Literally, it's take a cable from your switch. Plug it into the cable splitter, take another cable out of the cable splitter, and continue that connection onto your storage frame. That completes the circuit. Also on the cable splitter, there's one additional port in the little grouping there that you send a cable to your probe. So it's the only way I can describe it, it's a cable splitter in a box.
I'm sorry, I don't want to, I'm writing notes right now, I'm a very note-taking guy. Can we back that up? So you take the cable, I know this is kind of technical, I deal with more technical day-to-day.
Sure.
You take the cable from the switch.
Mm-hmm. Plug it into the cable splitter.
And then what do you do from there?
So when you look at the cable splitter at the front of it, I'm going to use the term loosely, every port is actually groupings of 3 LC connections. One is the cable coming from the switch going into the splitter. The second one is the cable coming out of the splitter all the way to your storage frame. The third one is a cable coming out of the splitter going to your probe. So somewhere in the box, it's splitting your signal. It's completing the connection between the switch and the storage frame, but it's also, you know, splitting a little bit of the light off and sending it to your probe for capture.
And so you put that as part of your standard procedure, for especially like critical databases, correct?
Right now, I've got it on every storage port coming out of the back of
every
it.
Every storage port?
The splitter itself was really inexpensive. At the time I got them, they were listed at $5,000 a pop for 16 ports of splitting. So it was an insurance policy that I basically took out on all my ports. It's paid dividends for me once in the last year that I've had them already allocated. I had a SRDF problem when I was trying to replicate 2 EMC storage frames. Because I already had the ports split, EMC came in, attached an actual fiber channel analyzer, took a trace, and they were in and out the door in 4 hours, and within 2 days I had my answer. Their other alternative was to break the link, put the analyzer in, hope to see the problem. You know, once they saw the problem, I'd have to break the link again to get it out. Since I'd already broken the link to get the splitter in, I didn't have to suffer all that problem. The other nicety is because all my ports are split, if I've got, I'm watching my data warehouse today, but let's say something else poked up as a problem, like a SQL database somewhere, I can disconnect my probe, slap it on the storage ports that represent the SQL database and start watching it. And because it's already split, you don't get a link fill. You don't get a link drop. There's no link interruption whatsoever. So it's sort of like,
Hello?
Still here, Johnny.
I'm sorry. It happened again.
You got cut off, so you missed the answer.
I got cut off. I got cut off. You were going and going out, and I'm like really in tune, and I got cut off, so I lost the last like 30 seconds that you were saying.
So Johnny, we'll have this all recorded, so we're almost 48 minutes in, so we can share that with you.
I appreciate the recording. I guess one thing real quickly is when you Brian, I know I have a lot of questions. Like I said, I do a lot of technical. Mm-hmm. SAN admin storage stuff day to day. When you provision this, like for example, when you have a new request come in, new AXPIO, you need to connect to HPA and all that,
mm-hmm.
and you have to assign a new LUN, how long will it take you to set up this probe splitter portion?
Well, so if I've got a new server coming in, I guess the question is better phrased as if I got a new storage port coming into my environment, how long does it take to split it off?
Yes.
Initially, it added about 5 minutes per storage port to get it cabled into my environment, just because I had to, get the syntax of. It's one more thing that my guys had to understand. Okay, you plug the switch cable into the left side of the probe or into the splitter, the storage cable goes into the right side of the splitter, and the probe cable comes off of it. Or you can just leave the probe cable missing if you wanted. It was that one extra step in the algorithm of connecting a storage port to your environment. Once I got that down, there's no perceivable difference when they hook up a storage port.
When you do that splitter, it basically gives you very detailed information between the point of the HPA from the host from all the way to the switch and from the switch to the storage port. It'll give you that detail from end to end.
To be very clear and specific, the splitter is nothing more than it's non-powered. Think of it as like a coaxial splitter. It doesn't do anything magical. It just splits the light. So the splitter doesn't gain any information for you. You have to put that split light into a probe so we can analyze the light for you. The probe's the guy that gathers all that information that you were speaking of. And so the interesting thing is the reason that I stick them in front of the storage ports, those are my targets. The only reason initiators join my fabric is to talk to a target. So rather than having to split out every host port, if I split right in front of the storage port, I'm going to get every conversation anyway. So I'm hedging my bet by putting my probes in front of the storage ports or putting them in front of the targets.
Right, because you could have multiple hosts connected to that one storage port.
Absolutely,
right?
And I get all that host information. If I did it the other way, I'd have to buy a probe for every host port, which would put me out of business.
Okay. The other thing is, I totally agree with you here. Right before I got cut off the first time, I was disconnected. It was before you went to the SAN switches, you're talking about how the biggest issue, and I agree with you here, is when there's an issue with performance, there's some gray area, they say, mm-hmm. hey, we think it's your problem. I mean, it always seems to be a SAN problem.
Yep.
right when, application database, they don't have any tools they're using on their end.
They're usually using IOSTAT.
Yeah, I don't know what they're using, but whatever they're using is not too good. But the first thing they want to prove is, automatically think it's a disk problem.
So
a SAN switch problem.
The nice thing when you first install NetWisdom as an example, you don't have this ability, but you'll be able to tell real time, and it'll start databasing immediately what your response times are. Once you've had it installed for a couple hours or a couple weeks, and it's got all that database information, you can take a look at it and say, well, look, you said you had a problem on Monday. I took a look. Here's your response times from last Monday. Here's your response times from this Monday. Here's your response times from Tuesday, Wednesday. And, you can show them in graphs that your response time has been steady the entire time. I can show not just response times. I can show activity levels. I can show all other sorts of things and put it in black and white in front of them. I joke that when I go into meetings now, it's the person with the most graphs and the most information that is not blamed for the problem. When I come armed with graphs, people tend to I'm no longer the dark horse in these root cause analysis meetings. I'm a trusted resource, and when I come in and I have graphs to show it's not me, everyone believes me, and it's a foregone conclusion that if NetWisdom is saying that there's no problem, and there is no problem.
So NetWisdom gathers all that information from the probe and then basically graphs it for you.
Yep.
Basically, right?
Okay. Yep. Absolutely right.
Now, real quick, I know I'm taking a lot of time. Before you had the NetWisdom tool, I know you struggled with it 5 years. What did you do during those 5 years? Did you just basically do what you could with the native tools that came with the vendor?
Yes. And it was correlate storage frame performance to switch activity levels. And again, I could only get real-time stuff. So if somebody called me and said, I had a problem last Monday,
okay.
The storage frame stuff could give me some historical information, but I couldn't do it from the switch.
Okay.
It was
gotcha.
It was literally, I mean, I gave some of the worst answers in my career saying, well, look, you've got a 2-gig link here. You're only using 60 meg. That leaves 140 meg available to you to use. Why? You know, there's plenty of space available. You're just not using it, which is the worst answer you can give because that doesn't speak to the,
right.
to performance or to the experience.
Ryan, I'd like to thank you for your time. I appreciate what you've on. What I want to ask is kind of a question that's because I like to talk more technical. I don't know if you mind sharing your email or a contact offline or, you know, I don't
sure.
know how I can do that.
So Johnny, you know how to get in touch with me, right?
Is Dave Valiente?
Yeah, Dave Vellante.
Hi, Dave. This is Johnny. You remember me?
Yeah, of course I do. Thanks for coming.
All right.
So anybody, you know, if you want to get Ryan, if it's okay with you, I can be the conduit myself or David.Butler, B-U-T-L-E-R, wikibon.org.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
So
great.
Anybody, any of the practitioners out there that want to, you know, have an offline with Ryan, just please let us know. You know how to get me.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Ryan.
I had a couple other questions, but is there anybody else who wants to jump in?
Yeah, should be pretty quick. My name is Rich Ramos. I was just wondering, does the software give you any breakdown on the virtualized aspects of it, so on virtual machine per virtual machine, so you can isolate from that regard to say if one VM is causing a lot more load than others?
Well, are you running, or you just mentioned it, I think, are you running an actual VM environment, or are you, because I'm mostly an AIX LPAR environment. In the VM sense, from
yep.
what I've been told from the virtual instruments folks, they will have the ability to drill down into the individual VMs and look at that stuff. I have 4 ESX boxes total, and they're probably running, I don't know, 10 or 20 guest operating systems, so it's not really big in my environment. From
Does
the
anybody
AX,
in the call know the answer to Rich's question specifically around VM?
This is John Hart at Self Regional. If you look on their website for virtual instances or virtual instruments, they actually have a whole software suite that kind of talks with vCenter, and I believe that would be where you'd want to look.
I'm sorry, who was speaking?
John Hart, Self Regional Healthcare.
Thank you, John.
But if you pull up Virtual Instruments website, they've got a whole package for VMware.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so I think bluntly the answer is yes, it can. I don't happen to use it though. It doesn't help me in the AIXL part piece of it. To be very blunt, at the probe level, what you're getting is SCSI exchange information. So the initiator that it understands in the fiber channel packet is actually the initiator of the ESX box in your case or the VIO box in my case. It's the physical HBA would be the initiator. It doesn't know that it's actually coming from something behind it.
Okay, other questions?
Yes, this is Simon speaking. I have a quick question. So obviously I understand the value of this tool, and however it seems to be more performance centric and switch centric. Do you use anything like ECC or, you know, NetScreen to get like more array based metrics, you know, perhaps how full is the array or what type of array you have across all the arrays?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I'd also mention that I use NetApp's SandScreen, which up until less than a year ago used to be Onero's SandScreen. I use that for that piece of the puzzle. I have ECC, and I'm in the process of getting rid of it. If you've ever used it, it has an agent on every machine everywhere, has an agent for, you know, absolutely every little aspect of this thing. One of the beautiful things that SandScreen does for me is it collects ECC type information with no agents. So I don't have to bother, you know, individual hosts or system administrators, hey, you need to put my agent on your box so I can manage it. Now, SandScreen doesn't do any of the management aspects of it. It doesn't do allocations. It doesn't do zoning. But it does do reporting to tell me, hey, you've got 2 terabytes of Tier 1 disk left in this storage frame, or, you know, here's your chew rate of Tier 3 disk in this storage frame.
Okay. So it's, yeah, that's actually what I was asking, because we do have ECC implemented, but we have some doubts about the value of it.
Yeah, you know, and what it came down to was
we have about 15,000 ports, and we have about 40,000, you know, customers, and it's just the management of it is just becoming very cumbersome.
It's overwhelming at times, I imagine. I don't have nearly that many ports here, but it's. I had to dedicate one of my guys to every morning, Monday morning at 8 a.m., he'd go through ECC and find which host agents went offline. And he'd have to go and track down the system administrator and find out, can you recycle the agent for us? Or, I mean, that took one of my SAN guys, you know, it took precious hours of work time away from me. And I joked that I became a tool for ECC as opposed to it being a tool for me to use. So the number of benefits that it gave me were, they're there, but you'd be surprised at how fast SanScreen can get the same information. I mean, when you right-click on a host and go to, you know, like, show me the relationship between the host and the LUNs, if it's got any more than two LUNs, ECC for me would chug for 15, 20 minutes before it would give me the answer, and I thought I threw a pretty beefy machine at it. SanScreen gives me that answer instantaneously almost. I mentioned it earlier, they're getting paid to create a product to do these types of things, whereas EMC is getting paid to sell you a storage frame, and kind of, you know, alluding to the fact that you have to use this tool to manage it. So there are companies out there that make their money by making better monitoring tools. I guess that, jeez, I just summed up the whole hour in one sentence.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yep.
Is there another question? Comment? You wanted me to remind you, Ryan, to circle back. You had talked about some of the data that you were capturing in terms of megabytes per second, CRC errors, logins, logouts, and you said remind you to circle back on that. I don't know if that's a key point you wanted to make. Or
no, I wanted to definitely get the database backup window story out, because that's one of those things that, I'll be honest, when I POC'd NetWisdom, they never, you know, that wasn't in their presentation. That was never a, hey, you can use this metric to do, you know, to solve a backup window problem. It's just one of the many things that you've stumbled across after you use this product for a while that, oh my God, this thing is really powerful, and their marketing team's got a heck of a job trying to come up with all the use cases for it, but we've had hundreds of them.
Yeah, the after-the-fact ROI is obvious, but going in, it's not so obvious.
That's the thing, because a lot of it is cost prevention, you know, cost avoidance, and that's, I can't imagine how you'd come up with an ROI statement for something like that.
Okay, well, we have to wrap. Ryan, on behalf of the Wikibon community, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experiences, and we appreciate that very much, so thank you.
Sure, my pleasure.
And I'd also like to thank the other Wikibon members who contributed to the call today, David Floyer, John MacArthur, Johnny, good to talk to you, you note-taking guy, Rich Ramos, John Hart, and Simon. Thank you very much for your questions and comments. As a reminder, our next Peer Insight is scheduled for Tuesday, February 2nd at 12 noon East Coast time, and the topic is FCOE, Fact versus Fiction, and we'll be joined by several technologists and bloggers, including Dave Graham, my man Stu Miniman, and Nigel Poulton, and a cast of characters from the technology and blogger world. And as another reminder, over the next 24 hours or so, we'll have up on Wikibon 6 research notes pertaining to this call today, with user action, so look for that, and please feel free to hit the edit tab and improve the pieces, or put up your own pieces, or write a wiki tip. And we'll also be producing a podcast of this call, and we'll be sending that out as well to everybody. So thanks for listening, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.